Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a special Screen Picks podcast. We're going to talk about the Oscars ceremony that just happened, the 95th Academy Awards. We're going to do a recap of it, and I'm joined by my Oscar pundits and good friends, Andrew Payne, Adam Spunberg, and Joel Amos. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing
excellent.
I'm filling in for host Phil Wallace, who we missed dearly, but he's on vacation, so he asked if I could host our recap of the show. So I'm just going to kind of start it off. Let's talk about the winners first off. So was anyone surprised? Anything that was surprising to them who won? I thought all Quiet on the Western Front won more than I think we thought it was going to, right?
Yeah. That. I mean, I actually love that movie. I think I've said it here before. That's like one of my favorite books. But like, it won in a couple of categories that I didn't think it would win, and it won in the categories that I thought it would. But I think for me, the biggest one is the production design. I mean, you look at like whether it's Elvis or Babylon. And the attention to detail of both of those movies is just uncanny. And so for me, that was a shock. And I don't know, I'm not necessarily the expert on the war movie, but like, I think, you know, war movies, I don't think they have a long history of winning this award. And I don't know what necessarily made it win that award, because it was just kind of a lot of dirt, but like, it was quite realistic. I don't know. Yeah.
How about you, Andrew?
Dirt, trenches and rats.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. It's interesting because I think if you remember, I don't know exactly what year this was. It was like 2009 or something like that. There was the year where Hurt Locker won kind of all the big awards and Avatar won all the technical awards, and it felt kind of like that again, like Everything Everywhere All at Once essentially swept the major categories. It won everything that it could have in the major categories. There was not a lead actor in the movie, so it could not have won that, but won both supporting, won lead actress, won screenplay, won director, won picture, and won film editing, and then All Quiet on the Western Front swept the technical awards, and I would not have seen that coming. I would have thought that if you were going to take a movie from the year and said, we want to award this movie for its technical achievements, you would have gone with Top Gun Maverick, just because it was such a big movie and certainly deserving of a lot of the technical Oscars. It did win Best Sound, so it was surprising to me to see All Quiet on the Western Front win all those Oscars. Like, it kept running. I think we were texting during the show and we said, is this going to win Best Picture? Like, it just keeps winning everything. And it won the BAFTA for Best Picture. So it wouldn't have been completely out of nowhere for it to win Best Picture. But then once Everything won screenplay, and you know, that was kind of a 50-50 between that and Banshees of Inisherin. It seemed pretty definitive at that point that it was going to end up just sweeping the rest of the awards.
Yeah, I agree. Screenplay was key.
Yeah. How about you, Adam? Anything struck you as surprising?
No, I mean, I think you all nailed it. I mean, there's really, to me, two movies that were the story. Everything Everywhere All at Once, of course, and All Quiet on the Western Front. And it reminded me a little bit, All Quiet was, you had some kind of below the radar, let's say, not best picture winners, but movies that have cleaned up. Grand Budapest Hotel is one I was thinking of. Life of Pi, you know, it really did incredibly well. But I was, you know, I think, Joel, you have a great point, because maybe when you look at specific categories, you know, did it deserve to win on certain technical levels? But on a bigger narrative, you know, I think it was really quite amazing that this German film of a story that has been done before, that they were able to do it so well, to capture, you know, the glory of the Academy. I did feel pretty excited for it, and I think it was a great movie that deserved a lot of accolades. So made me happy. And the other thing that stood out to me about Everything Everywhere All at Once, I don't know if I can ever remember a movie that seemed to have the crowd at the Oscars so excited and rooting for it. You know, it was such a high energy, clearly beloved movie by other actors and directors and film people. So I think that sort of rubbed off and made the show a little bit more exciting in general.
And actually, if I could pigtail to that, I think on the opposite end of that is Babylon. And I think we all thought that Babylon would win Best Production Design, perhaps Score. But like I think we were talking about this before, is that it's kind of become a joke. Like one of those, oh, that movie bombed, it's a joke. And it's like there was, and I didn't necessarily see this coming, but like I felt it during the show that like it's the new bomb that everybody's going to talk about. And that killed its chances for anything.
Which is a shame.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah,
I finally watched it last night before the show, the night before the ceremony, and certainly it should have won for production design. I mean, it's interesting when they show All Quiet, and you can tell that like a lot of it's CGI.
Yep.
It was also interesting when they showed the whale winning for best makeup, and then they talked about how it's basically all CGI. It's like, well, is there a new, like, is there just a new world of makeup where CGI counts? But either way, yeah, I think you're right, Joel. I mean, Babylon's essentially the new Heaven's Gate. I mean, Paramount basically said to Damien Chazelle, go make whatever movie you want to. And I think when you see that movie, it's pretty clear that's what happened, because no studio executive would ever give somebody a bunch of money to make that movie. They'd be like, who on earth is going to want to see this? But I thought it was a very fun, enjoyable movie. And certainly from a design standpoint and the score, is fantastic.
Yes.
But, I think you're right. It's become such a kind of punchline, and it was such a disaster at the box office that it was hard probably for anybody to back it for anything.
Even if it deserved it.
I know. I thought that was a bit of a shame, because I did like it too. Now, like everybody I've talked to who's actually seen it, they're like, yeah, I kind of liked it, you know? So who knows? Who knows what people think? I also felt that let's talk about some of the winners' speeches and stuff. I mean, I also felt like this year was the year of the underdog, man. I mean, it was one of the more emotional ceremonies I've seen in a long time, where like literally everyone who got up there to accept their award has been either been around forever and, you know, is finally getting recognition, like he and Brendan and you know, or like Michelle Yeoh as well. It's like, I just felt like it was certainly like, and of Jamie Lee Curtis, who I actually didn't vote for, darn it, I should have, but I didn't. I was thinking that at least they'd give maybe Banshee something. I mean, you know, that's like you, Andrew, you and I were both on the Carrie Condon wagon there. But yeah, I just felt like it was a very emotional as far as the speeches. Did you guys feel the same way? I'll let Andrew start.
Yeah, it did feel like, you know, every year there's the career award, right? There's the person who'd never won before, or, you know, it's the Martin Scorsese for The Departed and, you know, all those types of awards. I mean, even like, I mean, it's interesting to say like Leo for The Revenant. That was essentially one of those. Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, even though we're pretty sure that they're going to have many more chances. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, Kyu Kwan, and Brendan Fraser, all four of them felt like that. And all of their speeches were really about how, you know, they've been doing this for a while. I really like Jamie Lee Curtis's speech. I mean, I really like Kyu Kwan's speech. Brendan Fraser's speech was a little incoherent, but you could kind of tell just when they were cutting to the nominees how visibly nervous he was. And I think that that's very honest, because what was also great about the awards this year, except for Ke Kwan, although I'm sure that even he probably is not going to, you know, count his chickens before they hatch, but none of the acting nominees were a sure thing, like the other three categories.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of that emotion was really honest and really genuine. You know, normally we know who's going to win, right? Like when Julia Roberts won for Erin Brockovich, there was no doubt that she was going to win. When George Clooney won for Syriana, there was no doubt that he's going to win. There was no doubt Brad Pitt was going to win. All of those. But all of these were, they could have just as easily said Austin Butler or Angela Bassett or Carrie Condon or Kate Blanchett, and they didn't. And I think that we ended up getting some more kind of honest, emotional speeches. And, you know, they ranged from good with Jamie Lee Curtis to the, you know, incomprehensible with Brendan Fraser, where I'm not even 100% sure what he was saying. But it was great to see, like, that level of emotion and that level of kind of humility from those caliber of stars.
Yeah, it's true. How about you, Adam? Were you impressed by those speeches?
Yeah, I mean, look, maybe there's some recency bias here, and I don't want to sound, you know, like I'm full of hyperbole, but I thought these were the best acceptance speeches I could remember at an Oscar for a long time. I mean, there have been truly great moments at a lot of Oscars, but in terms of consistently one after the other, even some of the lesser awards, you know, I felt like almost everybody had something interesting or meaningful to say, which I really enjoyed. And, yeah, I mean, for some people, it was just, you know, watching how much it meant to the underdogs, as you said, Kit, and so overjoyed. That's what, you know, it was kind of like the American dream in a sense, right? People who have been counted out or waited a long time.
Yep.
For this recognition. So I have to say, maybe I'm sentimental and a sucker, but there were a couple times I had some tears in my eyes. I'm not going to lie, watching this today. And I thought that was really amazing.
Well, certainly Key was one that just got me going. I mean, right off the bat, man, just he couldn't get through it. He was so emotional. You're like, how can you not tear up? Like, you're inhuman if you can't cry at his speech. It was so cute. I love the way he stood up, though, when Harrison Ford came out to hand out the best picture.
That was,
and they panned to him, and he's standing up.
I mean, could you imagine there you are shooting Temple of Doom, you know, and you could tell them this moment is going to happen, you know, 40 years later or whatever it is. I mean,
you couldn't write it.
That's such an incredible thing.
You couldn't write that.
You know,
you can't write that.
No, you couldn't write that. You know, it's interesting. This actually was my daughter has seen the Oscars in various forms. She's 9. At 3 or 4, she was really into the red carpet and the pretty dresses and all that. But tonight was the first night we watched with her from beginning to end. And I'm really thrilled that you brought up that phrase, because she kept repeating the word, is he talking or is she talking about the American dream? And to a 9-year-old, to be inspired like that, and then to have somebody tell you, you know, don't let anyone tell you you're past your prime. I mean, these are things that sink through that as a father, I can't even teach, because there's something about the star and her glamorous dress saying it that, like, really hits home with my daughter, and especially if there's tears and, oh my gosh, she was like on Is Daddy Crying Patrol all night. And, you know, there were a couple, 4 or 5 times where she's like, Daddy's crying. And I'm like, yeah, I know. So like, yeah, I thought the speeches were pretty incredible. And I agree with Andrew about Brendan. And I saw it, we saw him at the Hollywood Critics Awards and other awards where he gave like the most inspiring speeches about being down and out, coming back and fighting. And I think that, like, the consensus with him was that he thought that Austin Butler was going to win. I mean, he didn't write anything.
Yeah.
And so I think when he got up there, he just – I mean, he didn't freeze because he still got out some decent stuff. But, like, I expected more from him. And you know, whatever. It's just my two cents. But, like, it's still a great achievement for him.
I was worried he was going to hyperventilate. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
I was –
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
nervously
he did not
get through the speech.
He was nervous. Yeah, he definitely was nervous. All right, so let's talk about the show itself. I thought Jimmy did a great job. He's kind of, you know, he's polished now, but his monologue was definitely his best part of the show. Do you guys agree? I'll let you start off, Adam. What did you think of the show itself?
Yeah, I thought he was terrific, but especially in the beginning. You know, a couple of the segments later on were a little hit and miss, I thought. But, you know, one thing that I was thinking is, and maybe it's representative of cynicism in general in Hollywood, but, you know, you've got Ricky Gervais and you've got a lot of people who bring sort of the more mean-spirited negative type of humor. It was kind of nice that he had a couple zingers, you know, that hit hard, but for the most part, it was more of a positive kind of hosting, and I did like that. I felt like that was, you know, appreciated at this time. His jokes were, for the most part, pretty good, and he just kind of, you know, seemed happy to be there, and I thought that there was a lot of energy that he was sharing, and it was sort of reverberating back between him and the presenters. And overall, it was really, I thought, one of the best Oscar shows there had been in quite some time.
Yeah, how about you, Joel?
I thought it started out great. I thought Jimmy just threaded that needle, especially after the slapping of last year. There was an elephant in the room, and I thought he handled it well without naming names.
Yeah.
I thought his comedy was fine. The other thing I think he did really well, and this is a good Oscar host that can do this, any host really, is react to what's happening.
Yeah.
Nothing scripted, but something that you just pull out of your head that really makes the moment. Like when he was talking to Masala and he asked her a question, and she just said, "I care about peace." I mean, that could have just been like an anvil that killed, you know, that moment. But, like, he just was like, okay, and moved on, and everything was fine. But I felt like, there was some great speeches at the beginning and some speeches sprinkled through, but I felt like it, after that, just, like, out of the gate, explosion of emotion between Kay and Jamie Lee that, like, everything else felt a little flat until it got, like, more going again. And that's all. And there was no real compilations that I really like to see. And if anything, I felt like Disney was co-opting the show to push Disney products. And, you know, it's their right to do that, their network. And Bob Iger was shown probably about 5 or 6 times in the audience. And he was interviewed on the red carpet a million times. But I just, you know, okay, we get it. You know, and I think it's important to celebrate 100 years of Disney. It was important to celebrate 100 years of Warner Brothers, but, like, it just sure felt like, and here's the new trailer for, and I don't remember that ever happening.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. I mean, we were texting Andrew. You said, "What is this? What's going on?" Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the addition of branded content, like, inside the Oscars was jarring, to say the least. And, you know, it's like, I don't want to be some old sanctimonious person who, you know, doesn't understand the way the world is going. But they've never done anything like that before. And I know that, you know, for telecasts like this, especially if audiences are dwindling, they're looking for any way they can possibly sell an ad. So that was clearly on display, having people come out and introduce clips as though they were part of the show and they were just basically just throwing the commercials. So that was surprising. I agree. Like, I really liked the monologue. It felt to me almost like I want to say like Johnny Carson-esque, like Kimmel was trying to be sort of almost the mayor of Hollywood there. And I thought he did a really good job with that. And it kind of makes sense. I mean, he's the only major late night talk show host that's in LA anymore. And it really felt like he was kind of hosting a party and kind of presiding over the LA scene. And I think that he did a good job of that. But then after that, the show was just award, 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 award. There wasn't anything else in it. There were no montages, even though I think they promised that there were going to be montages. There were no celebrations of film from the year, anything like that. It was just awards. And the only sort of breaking up of that was a couple of these commercials that they basically worked into it with the Little Mermaid and the Warner Brothers thing like that. Yeah, it's just, there wasn't much going on after that. Like, I think that it was fine. You know, it moved as fast as something like that can move. I'm of the opinion of, I don't really care how long the Oscars is, as long as they're doing something with the length. And with this, it was just, it didn't feel like much really happened after the opening.
I'm sorry, this year, besides Natu Natu, which was so above and beyond better than any of those other songs, the song category was the worst, I think, that I can think of in recent memory. I mean, the Lady Gaga song was great. She's extremely talented. But what was happening with that song from Everything Everywhere All At Once? What in the hell was that?
That's David
Byrne. Oh, yeah, that was pretty bad. Yeah, I mean, that was David Byrne. I mean, that's essentially, David Byrne has more or less become like, I don't know, like if you watch American Utopia, which was the thing he did.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like your sort of like adult local theater company got their hands on Talking Head songs and like put something like that's what it always felt like to me. It's not good. And that was very much in that vein with him like doing his little, you know, movements and non-dancing and wearing his suit. And that song is not good. I mean, the Taylor Swift song from the Crawdads movie. Taylor Swift song from the Crawdads movie wasn't, you know, even in her top 100 songs she's ever recorded, but it was certainly better than two or three of the songs that were nominated. And to get Taylor Swift at the Oscars, it's like, do any of the voters think of things like that? Like, if we nominate this song, Taylor Swift is going to come and perform at the Oscars.
Well, they had.
Doesn't mean she has to win.
They did have Rihanna and Lady Gaga, though. I mean, I feel like I have to stand up a little bit for that song, This Is a Life, because I agree that it's unusual, but I don't know if you've ever listened to, there's a podcast, Song Exploder, where they talk about some, there's actually like a really fascinating story behind that song and how it came together. So I could see how it would be like a polarizing acquired taste, but there's actually some kind of genius behind aspects of it, if you check that out.
So I like it
personally, I'm sorry to say, I like that song. But Kit, if I could just say one thing about an earlier comment, I do want to say when I was saying was the best show, I meant presenters, acceptance speeches.
Yeah.
But I do have to point out, I completely agree. I thought the weird studio promotion and then like Warner Brothers had one also, that was, I thought, really missed the mark. It felt like corporate shilling going on there. And I also didn't,
like they
even though I really, but, even, well, but even though I really like Lenny Kravitz,
like,
I felt like that
In Memoriam
was kind of weird too.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife
I
said
like
that
the song,
it,
right.
Like I loved Lenny, but I think that was the wrong song.
Yeah.
Because that was one of those moments where I was having my eyes examined whether I was crying. And I actually wasn't. And normally I do. And I think it was the song. And I love Lenny, but I just don't think that was right. And before I forget, if I can just indulge, I had a vision of the beginning of the show. And I would love to hear you guys if you think it's too much or too soon. But I had a vision, like, because Matt Damon and Jimmy Kimmel have such a rivalry. And I thought that Jimmy would come out and say there's an elephant in the room and we need to deal with it and let's just get it over with. And then Matt Damon would come out and slap him.
that's a great pitch.
Okay, thanks.
That would have been we actually said it out loud. When the bear comes out into the audience, right, and comes up to Jimmy,
yeah.
if he pulled off the bear head and it was Matt Damon, that would also have been a great little
exactly.
bit right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I thought for sure that was going to be Matt Damon.
I thought Matt Damon was going to appear somehow. I thought him slapping Jimmy would have packed a punch and
that
deflated would have that balloon
so funny.
Immediately. And then we just get on with
that
the
would
show.
Have been hilarious. Yeah, that would have been hilarious. Oh, well, we didn't
Thank
write
you.
The show. Yeah, I felt like it was a little bit lacking in what it gave us as far as winners and great speeches and just kind of inspiring the people who won was awesome, but the show itself kind of lacked. They're missing the comedy. It used to be funnier. They used to have funnier presenters. I mean, the best bit for me was Elizabeth Banks and the bear. I mean, that was hilarious. But that was, about it. There really wasn't anything else. I need my Tina Fey and my Amy Poehler or, I need, Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph. Will Ferrell and Jack Black. I mean,
Jack Black.
Something like that. Well, anyway, I know that before we get into what we think might win the Oscars next year, because I know Andrew has his list ready, I was just going to go through the Razzies real quick in reference to Mr. Phil Walls, who loves the Razzies. The worst picture was Blonde. Again,
good.
Why was Anna Diarmas nominated again? I mean, it looks like she did a great job, but my God, that movie is supposed to be horrible.
They expected it.
Yeah. And Jared Leto won for Morbius. Poor Jared Leto. Razzies won for Best Actress, Worst Actress for Razzies? I don't know what that means. Does anybody know that? I don't know. Tom Hanks wins Worst Supporting Actor for Elvis. That was
wow.
interesting.
Did anyone think Tom Hanks would ever win a Razzie?
There it goes. won a Razzie.
Knowing him, he's taking it in stride.
What's that?
I said, knowing him, he's taking it in stride.
Oh, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is.
If you told me a Hanks was getting a Razzie, yeah, I'd have bet on Colin Hanks way before Tom, if you were giving me an actual.
I would have bet on Chet Hanks. for worst original song for some who knows what. Or for Rita Wilson for worst original song, probably.
Okay.
All right, so here are our predictions.
Yes.
Think it's going to win Best Picture in 2024. Go ahead, Andrew. I don't have a list. I'm going to let you guys take this.
Best Picture. So the one thing I want to call out before I get to – I'll turn it over to everyone, and then I'll get to my lock of the year for next year. Next year is pretty interesting because it seems like there's a bunch of movies a lot of people are going to see that are going to get nominated for Best Picture. And I'm talking about – Oppenheimer, Dune
mm-hmm.
2, The Color Purple musical, Killers of the Flower Moon, the new Martin Scorsese movie that's supposed to have come out like 2 years in a row. These are all, and there's the new David Fincher movie, The Killer. which is written by Andrew Kevin Walker, so it's their kind of reunion from Seven. There's a lot of big, prominent movies that look like they're going to get nominated for Best Picture. There's the Wes Anderson movie Asteroid City, which has basically every single movie star in it, like Tom Hanks, Margot Robbie, Scarlett Johansson. It has everybody in it. And then the wild card is Barbie. It's Greta Gerwig, it's Noah Baumbach. What's it going to be? Is it going to be like a fun comedy, or is it going to be like a real high quality movie? So I'm really excited for next year, because since the pandemic, it's been a lot of like, have people seen this? Yeah. A lot of indie stuff, a lot of things like that. This feels like the first year in a while that there's some real big time movies coming out that look like not only Oscar contenders, but movies that a lot of people are going to see. But I'm interested to hear everyone else.
So what's your pick?
Before I give you my
I prediction.
Okay, all right, go ahead, Joel.
I think Killers of the Flower Moon. I think Killers of the Flower Moon is absolutely guaranteed for Martin Scorsese. I think it's best picture, best director, best actor. I think it could run the table on that. Whether it win, I don't know. But I am, and I know Andrew's making a prediction tonight. I am, too, making a prediction.
All right, here we go.
Christopher Nolan won best director for Oppenheimer. It may be a career award. He may deserve it. But the early buzz on that movie is really intense. And it's something that we really importantly need to see. And I got a feeling he's going to do it. The other thing I think people need to watch out for, and he was so warmly received with A Star Is Born, is Bradley Cooper for Best Actor and Best Director, perhaps, for Maestro, the story of Leonard Bernstein. So I didn't even know about that movie. Yeah, that is going to be in the mix. The buzz on that is already incredible. And he's playing Leonard Bernstein. And this is the guy who helped come up with West Side Story. And he wrote all this stuff. I mean, he is one of the more important American composers and conductors that ever existed. And given what Bradley did with A Star Is Born, I feel like that's going to be in the conversation.
Interesting.
How about you, Adam?
Any predictions?
I didn't know about Maestro. I was just looking it up, and Leonard Bernstein has always been like a personal hero to me in a sense, so I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, me too.
I would say the one I'm thinking about is Dune Part 2, just because sometimes when you have a glorious two-parter like that, it's almost a celebration of both films, and I thought the first one was really just so extraordinarily done by Denis Villeneuve, and I just assume he'll continue that trend, and maybe it'll become this sort of craze by the end of the year. But that's a dark horse prediction, let's say.
All right. Okay, Andrew, you're up.
All right, so I was a little torn on this one, so everyone knows I make this pick every year. The only one I've ever gotten right was when I picked Gary Oldman to win Best Actor for The Darkest Hour. The night of the 2016 Oscars, he won the 2017 Oscars, or maybe whatever, the year of 2017. So this has ranged from bad, including I picked Saoirse Ronan one year to win Best Actress for Mary, Queen of Scots. Don't know what I was thinking there. To close, I picked Paul Thomas Anderson to win Best Director for Licorice Pizza, and that was pretty close. So this year I picked Carey Mulligan to win Best Supporting Actress for She Said. And so I was torn between two things. I was torn between Color Purple musical. So you have Fantasia Barrino. She's reprising a role, Tony-winning role on Broadway. She's playing the lead in the movie, so I think that's a very strong contender. I think everybody involved in that movie is a very strong contender. But Joel mentioned it, Maestro. It's going to be on Netflix, the new Bradley Cooper movie. I am going, for the second straight year, I am picking Carey Mulligan to win an Oscar.
Yes.
She is playing Felicia Bernstein, Leonard Bernstein's wife. And if you think about some of these biopics about musicians, like the one that I think about is Walk the Line, where Reese Witherspoon won Best Actress for that. Usually the Oscars tend to go with the wife of the lead or the love interest of the lead in these movies. And given their marriage, because Leonard Bernstein was, he was married to a woman, but he was a homosexual, and they kind of had kind of like an understanding in their marriage. And I imagine that that's going to be sort of the dramatic focal point of the film. It's supposed to focus on their marriage. And given all of that, and given the fact that Carey Mulligan is a great actress, and nearly won a couple years ago for Promising Young Woman, and I picked her this year to win Best Supporting Actress for She Said, I bet she was sixth in the nomination voting. I bet she just missed the nomination. But I think that she is going to win next year. So that is my pick a year out, is Carey Mulligan for the second consecutive year.
Okay, after hearing Andrew, I'm calling her Sweep.
I mean, I like Maestro. I mean, exactly what you said, Joel. I mean, he was great with A Star Is Born. He, like, that got nominated up and down for the Oscars.
Yeah.
Netflix has been knocking at the door with Mank, with All Quiet on the Western Front, with Roma. They've never really cashed in on that big Oscar sweep, and this is going to be their chance this year. But again, this next year is going to be loaded with Killers of the Flower Moon, with Oppenheimer, with Asteroid City. I'm really excited for Jeff Nichols' new movie, The Bike Riders. I love Jeff Nichols, and it's got Austin Butler and Tom Hardy in it. You have Blitz, the Steve McQueen movie set during the Blitz in London, is going to be on Apple TV+. They obviously won Best Picture last year. I don't know if Ferrari by Michael Mann is going to come out since the studio went out of business. But if that comes out, you can see Adam Driver there. Alexander Payne has a new movie. It's David Fincher and Andrew Kevin Walker, like I mentioned. This is going to be a good year. I'm really excited. I feel like this is going to be the first year in a while that we're looking at this and movies are going to come out. We're like, ooh, what about that one? We didn't even talk about the Napoleon biopic, the Ridley Scott movie starring Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
I mean,
Yeah.
It's going to be a big year. And you know that there's going to be something at Cannes. There's going to be something at Toronto that we don't even know about yet. That's going to come out and enter the mix. So I think that this is going to be a loaded year next year.
That's a really good point.
Hey,
I mean, everybody
something to look forward
listening to this. Yeah, I think everybody listening to this should celebrate it. Theaters are back. Hollywood is back. And we are going to get sucked into that tsunami of greatness that's coming in 2023.
Yes. Yay.
I like that.
Well, thanks, guys, especially you, Adam, for joining us because you're in our New York office, our New York satellite or whatever. So thanks for staying up. But thanks, guys. Of course, we can't wait. Like you said, it's going to be a great year. So we're going to have some great Oscar talks towards the end of the year and whatnot. And signing off for all of you guys, as well as for me and Phil Wallace as well. I'm sure he'll listen to this at some point. But thanks for all your comments and whatnot. And we'll all talk soon. Good night, everybody.
I love Joel's quote there, a tsunami of greatness. You could say 2022 was a triangle of sadness, and 23 will be a tsunami of greatness. So.
Thank you.
There you go. We'll coin that. Okay, good night, everybody. We'll talk soon. Okay. Bye.
All right, good night.